Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 353 of the podcast. Today is Sunday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Lovely day for a Guinness. So cheers to you all. I got some Irish heritage, but we're all Irish on St. Patrick's Day, right? Hope everybody's enjoying some good drinks and festivities today, staying safe. Today also would have been my grandfather's birthday if he were still alive, my Irish grandfather. So pretty easy to remember. Irish grandpa's birthday was St. Patrick's Day. So I'll always have a bit of a heavy heart on this day, thinking about him. One of the toughest men I ever knew. Beat cancer 3 times. And I think mostly a result of diet throughout his life and a positive attitude, which I believe will go the longest way. When he got his first diagnosis, he was told there's a 17% survival rate. And he responded to that, well, why can't that be me? And he beat it. So I'll keep that with me forever, along with many other life lessons I learned from him. So cheers, Grandpa. Love you. All right. You guys are here for some MMA talk, I presume. So let's talk about UFC Vegas 88. This shaped up to be a much better card than I think anybody was anticipating, especially coming off of UFC 299, which was just spectacular. Definitely a contender for pay-per-view of the year, best card of the year. So on paper, this one wasn't all that thrilling. But if you tuned in on Thursday night, Matt the Mechanic and I were kind of going over the matchups here, and there was actually a lot of exciting matchups if you dug into it a little bit. So hopefully you guys did some digging. Hopefully you watched this card because it was great. And if you didn't, I'll catch you up. I'll give you the cliff notes right now. Maybe that's why you're here. You're not just here to see me drink a Guinness on St. Patrick's Day. All right. So main event, heavyweight matchup, Marcin Tybura and Tai Tuivasa. What I had said on Thursday was that if Ty was going to win this fight, he would have to make it dirty. He would have to make it a brawl. And that's exactly what Marcin Tybura did. I was surprised. Tybura came out like a man on fire. He was looking to make this fight dirty and gritty. Got in on a deep double leg on Tuivasa, couldn't finish it. But then he was able to get him to the ground, beat the fuck out of him down there. And then eventually was able to get the technical submission by putting Tai Tuivasa to sleep. I mean, Tybura's got to have a hell of a squeeze. I'd say, safe to say, this was the best Marcin Tybura has ever looked. I mean, he kind of has gotten a reputation for not being the most exciting heavyweight. You know, a lot of his wins coming by way of decision. Let's see, when was the last time he even finished a fight? Walt Harris in 2021. Yeah, so a lot of decisions. He was coming off that loss to Tom Aspinall, where he just got trucked in the first round. But Marcin Tybura is a legit contender, man. And he looked amazing. When he got Tai Tuivasa on the ground, Tai didn't look like he knew what to do. It looked like he didn't know where to put his hands. It was like a episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like, what do I do with my hands? I never know what to do with my hands. But yeah, Tybura was dropping some nasty ground and pound. Once he got on Tuivasa's back, it was all but over. And then it's always a bad sign when somebody gets put in a rear naked choke and they're not even fighting the hands. Like, Ty was just kind of like, what do I do here? I mean, this is like day 3 of jiu-jitsu, defending the rear naked choke, 2-on-1. you got to attack the choking arm right away, right out of the gate. As soon as it comes around your neck, you need to be addressing the choking arm. And Ty was doing none of that. So I don't know if he just ignores the grappling training altogether or if he just does takedown defense and fence get-ups. But you've got to, like, even if you're not going to have a grappling-centric game, you've got to have some rear naked choke defense. You know, when you're at this level, to just completely ignore the arm that's around your neck, I can't understand it at this level. I'm still a big fan of Ty Tuivasa. I think he's got a great attitude. I love how respectful he was to Marcin Tybura after the fact. You know, some people would be a little grouchy after getting choked unconscious, but Ty, you could tell he's legitimately a good dude by the way he responded to this loss. Not so much good sportsmanship in the co-main event. So Brian Battle and Ange Lusa here in this welterweight bout. And this fight, it ended in the second round due to an accidental eye poke. Now, I noticed in the first round that Brian Battle was reaching out with his fingers extended. Now, the finger in the eye that happened to end the fight was a thumb. He was kind of pushing off, and his thumb went into the eye of Ange Lusa. Doctor came in, and the referee, who was Mike Beltran, decided that Ange Lusa can't go on. Now, of course, it has to be a no contest because it was an accidental eye poke. You know, had there been a warning or something, if Mike Beltran had been warning Brian Battle about extending his fingers and reaching out with his fingers extended, which technically is against the unified rules, which he was doing in the first round, if he had issued a warning, then this could have been a loss for Brian Battle here. So it's a no contest. Brian Battle was upset, understandably so. He was handily winning this fight. Everywhere it went, he was just quicker than Ange Lusa on the feet. He was landing combinations at will. He took him down. He was doing whatever he wanted to him on the ground. Great. But he poked the guy in the eye, and he couldn't continue. So fight ends. Official decision is announced. And then they kind of come to the middle, and it seems like they're just going to shake hands and walk away. But Brian Battle says to him, like, you're a bitch for not fighting, or, you know, whatever it was he said to him. Ange Lusa didn't like that. So Ange said, let's fight now. And Brian Battle says, I was whooping your ass and you want to fight now? And it kind of escalated from there. They had to be separated. So not the best look for either guy, really. And Brian Battle's argument was, look, he wants to fight me now, but he couldn't fight me 2 minutes ago when the fight got called off. And a lot of pictures going around the internet of Ange Lusa staring down Brian Battle with both eyes wide open. So could he have continued? Look, who knows? I mean, just because he was able to hold his eyes open doesn't mean he was able to participate in a cage fight. You know, you can't tell sometimes. A guy could have his eyes open and he could still have a scratched cornea or something, and the vision is blurred out of that eye. You know, only Ange Lusa knows how bad it was. And I guess maybe the doctor, if they're able to tell stuff like that. But it's not like, it wasn't like the typical eye pokes we see when guys can't continue, when, you know, the eye is shut and it starts swelling and it's very clear that they can't continue. But, you know, there are instances where there's damage that's not visible to the naked eye, no pun intended. So maybe that was the case. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe he was looking for a way out, like Brian Battle said. In the post-fight interview, Brian Battle said he wants to move on. He wants to fight a contender. He doesn't want to run this back, but he will happily give Ange Lusa a rematch if that's what the UFC wants to do. I don't need to see it. I don't think any of us really need to see a rematch. We kind of knew how this one was going and the path it was headed down. I mean, if they rematched, I don't think it would be very interesting. I would like to see something else for Brian Battle. I think he was pretty clearly winning that fight. I think he's ready for this top 15. You know, possibly a fight with Kevin Holland. I think the timeline matches up well. Kevin Holland didn't take a whole lot of damage in the fight with Michael Venom Page. So he took a bump down at the rankings. He's skirting at the bottom of that top 15 in the welterweight division now. I think that's the fight to make. You know, possibly we do Brian Battle and, I don't know, do you do a Vicente Luque? I wouldn't put him in the top 10 yet, you know, especially coming off of this controversial fight. But I think the bottom of that top 15, he's ready for. He looked crazy sharp last night and really impressive until he jammed his thumb in Ange Luce's eye. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? What should be next for Brian Battle? You want to see the rematch with Ange Luce, or are we ready for something new? Some fresh blood here. I think we can move on personally. All due respect. All right. Ovince St. Preux getting a split decision win over Kennedy and Zetchiku. This was a close fight. Not a whole lot going on until the third round when Ovince dropped in Zetchiku and then was kind of pouring the pressure on. And then these guys started really going at it. It was a real slugfest in that third round. What I saw in the first couple of rounds was Kennedy being too respectful of Ovince. And I get it. You know, Ovince St. Preux is a veteran of the UFC. He's been in there with the best of the best. I mean, he's been in there with John Jones, for crying out loud. We've seen him have really high highs and really low lows. You know, he went through a period where it seemed like he wasn't motivated to fight at all anymore. And then he kind of shook it off. But I saw Kennedy and Zetchiku as the faster fighter, as the stronger fighter, and as the more technical fighter. But I don't think anybody told Kennedy and Zetchiku, because he was showing way too much respect to Ovince St. Preux. And, you know, that allowed Ovince to kind of land a little bit more. Kennedy allowed it to become a boxing match. I mean, if you looked, he was wearing the shorts that have the slits all the way up the sides, and he didn't throw any kicks. And he had that southpaw versus orthodox matchup. That body kick is so available for that matchup. He could have been throwing some kicks to the body of Ovince, and I think really hurt him early on. But you know, he chose to, I think, respect Ovince's power a little bit too much. He wasn't stringing his combinations together as much as he could have, given the very apparent speed advantage he had. So because of that, those first two rounds were kind of coin flips. The only round, you know, that was really obvious who won was the third round. And, you know, Ovince ran away with that one. So he got the split decision victory. I definitely could have seen scoring the first two rounds for Kennedy and Zetchiku, but if you had it close and you gave Ovince, you know, a slight edge in one of those rounds, I could see that as well. And then obviously with him taking the third round by a large margin, he gets a split decision win. So I don't think it was a robbery by any means. I think it was an uneventful two rounds. And then, you know, the guy who pushed it in the third round won. So I think this fight was meant to be a coming out party for Kennedy and Zetchiku, and just, you know, nobody let him know that he was invited. So that's kind of my take on it. All right. The most controversial decision of the night, Christian Rodriguez getting a split decision win over Isaac Dolgarian. So this was an interesting fight. Dolgarian gets Christian Rodriguez to the ground and just manhandles him, just ragdolls him for the first round. 10-8 round on all three judges' scorecards across the board for Isaac Dolgarian in that first round. Definitely understandable. I would have scored a 10-8 for Dolgarian as well. It was not looking good for Christian Rodriguez. Second round, more of the same, but Dolgarian was not doing as much damage, and Christian Rodriguez was countering a lot more. he was hurting Dalgarian on the entries to his takedowns because the takedowns were coming more slowly as the fight went on. Then in the third round, Dalgarian was completely gassed. And he wound up underneath Christian Rodriguez in some bad positions, had his back taken, was just getting totally beat up. The fight looked like it could have been stopped a couple of times. Good job by referee Chris Tognoni letting it go on, because every time Dalgarian was almost knocked out, it's like he got a second wind and he would grab onto a leg. But that was a 10-8 round for Christian Rodriguez. The controversy comes in, and how do you score that second round? You know, because even though Dalgarian was taking damage on the entries to the takedowns, he was still securing the takedowns and he was controlling the fight. Personally, I thought Dalgarian won the fight, but, you know, after hearing the argument that Rodriguez was doing more damage in that second round, I get it. I think it's just a mental shift in the way fights are scored now, because it used to be, if you could hold a guy down and control him for a round, you win that round. It doesn't matter what happens. You know, there's a few outlier examples, like, you know, Boss Rutten against Kevin Randleman back in the day when he was hurting Kevin Randleman from the bottom. But I don't think that this was even that obvious. I don't think that much damage was done in the second round as people are claiming. I think it was just, we were witnessing the gas tank of Isaac Dalgarian empty in front of our eyes. And obviously it was completely empty by the third round. So, you know, he was fighting at a wrestling pace, which you can't do. You know, there's a reason that wrestling periods are only 2 minutes long, because you can't keep up that pace for 15 minutes. You know, it's crazy. I mean, the way Isaac Dalgarian was chain wrestling was insane. The pace was insane. The fact that he was even able to do it through a round and a half is crazy. I guess he was expecting Christian Rodriguez to break, and you know, Christian Rodriguez said not this time. So Rodriguez gets the split decision victory. I don't know. How did you guys have it? First round 10-8 for Dalgarian, third round 10-8 for Rodriguez, and it all comes down to how you scored that second round. So let me know. Let's see. Okay. Macy Chiasson just steamrolls Pani Kianzad. Rear naked choke submission in the first round, just 3 minutes, 54 seconds into it. We had said on Thursday that this was going to come down to the gas tank of Macy Chiasson. You know, if she was able to get it done early, or she was able to get her hands on Pani Kianzad early, then it would be an easy night for her. And if not, you know, Pani would probably put the pressure on and start to run away with it towards the end of the fight, but didn't get that far. Macy Chiasson gets away with the first round rear naked choke victory. Another rear naked choke victory, Gerald Meerschaert. They're calling it a face crank on this one, but he gets a squeeze on Brian Barberina. I don't know why they're calling it a face crank. Didn't he put Brian Barberina to sleep? End of the second round for this one. Gerald Meerschaert, man, once that dude gets on your back, he's so slick. I think he doesn't get enough credit, you know, because he's had, you know, quite a few hiccups in his career, but this dude is so durable. He's so good on the ground. I think he just tied Anderson Silva's record for the most finishes in middleweight history. Very underappreciated fighter, in my opinion. Let's see. Matt Temple and Mark Fellows having a little back and forth in the comments. So Matt the Mechanic, I guess, got the reverse parlay, got every single pick wrong this week, which I thought he had picked Macy Chiasson, if I remember correctly. But I guess not. Texted me early this morning and said he got every single one wrong. So maybe start watching Picks and Pours on Thursdays at 9 or 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, and just pick the opposite of whatever Matt the Mechanic says, and maybe you'll make some money. Seems like a pretty good plan to me. Mike Davis looked phenomenal against Natan Levy. Coming off a long layoff, looked in great shape. Got in there against a much taller and longer Natan Levy. This one was at a catch weight. I'm not sure why. But he had a really nice transition from the back to the head and arm choke, which I'm a big fan of. When you lose the back control, keep the arm and kind of roll into the mount. He had to readjust a couple of times, but you know, he was able to get that arm triangle finish. Very impressive performance from Mike Davis. Let's see. I'm gonna keep it pretty short for you guys today. And also because I didn't catch a lot of the prelims, so let me know if there's any I have to go back and look at. Chelsea Chandler, unanimous decision over Josiane Nunez. Jafel Filho, rear naked choke against Ode Osborne. I think there were 6 submissions on this card altogether, which is why it ended nice and early, which was perfect for me. I was just getting back from vacation with the family. Got home at like 7 p.m. after driving a few hours from Manatee Springs, Florida, which was a pretty good time. We saw a lot of the springs in upstate Florida, and it's fun. Nice hiking trails. You know, have a couple of beers, go for a hike, jump in the springs to cool off. It was a good time. I recommend Wakulla Springs. That was my favorite one. Wakulla. All right, carrying on here. Danny Silva, split decision win over Josh Koulibal. I did not see this one, so I don't know if the split decision was really that close or not. Jacqueline Amarim submits Corey McKenna with an armbar in the first round. That one was over pretty quick. And then Thiago Moises TKOs Mitch Ramirez with leg kicks. I have to go back and watch this one. I love a good leg kick TKO. 15 seconds into the third round. So I guess he was beating up the legs pretty good through the first 2 rounds. And then, Mitch didn't have a leg to stand on in that third round, so to speak. So there we have it. UFC Vegas 88. I thought it was a really fun card. You know, even the no contest was kind of fun. It was like good TV because of all the drama that ensued. But, you know, let me know what you guys think. Let me know how you scored. I want to know a couple of things from you guys. I want to know how you scored the Christian Rodriguez and Isaac Dalgarian fight. And I want to know if you want to see a rematch between Brian Battle and Angelusa, or if you want to see Brian Battle get in there with a top 15 fighter. All right. We're going to take a quick peek at, I guess, what is UFC Vegas 89. And I don't care about anything on this card except for my buddy Billy Quarantello on the main card, stepping in there against Yusuf Zalal, who is coming in on very short notice, which is always a dangerous fight, right? Everybody always gives credit to the person stepping in short notice, in this case, Zalal. But very few people give credit to the fighter who are taking an opponent change last minute. Like, yeah, they had a fight camp and they came in prepared, but, you know, statistically, the guys coming in on short notice with nothing to lose tend to have better luck. You know, the best example is Michael Bisping coming in on short notice against Luke Rockhold. And Bisping has even admitted that this himself. Like, if he had gone through the stress of a training camp where he's thinking about Luke Rockhold every single day, you know, maybe it wouldn't have gone as well as it had. But he was able to go in there without a care in the world and say, fuck it, I got nothing to lose. Let me just swing for the fences. And that's what he did. And he became a world champion because of it. So let's see. So the point I was getting at is credit to Billy for taking this fight on short notice, because Yusuf Zalal coming in on a 3-fight win streak, all first round finishes. So obviously a tough dude. He was in the UFC, lost 3 in a row. But if you look at the losses, he lost to Ilya Topuria, who's the current champion. Then he lost a close decision to Sungwoo Choi. And then he lost a split decision to Sean Woodson, who is like, I don't know, 6'11", 145 pounds. And then he had a majority draw against Damon Blackshear. So streak of bad luck, but also against really high level competition. Right? So he goes outside of the UFC, gets 3 first round finishes, and the UFC says, all right, maybe there was something we didn't see in this kid. And now, you know, those losses have aged pretty well, especially against Topuria, in which, you know, he went the distance with him. That was back in 2020. And, you know, we've seen Topuria have incredible finishing power since then. So, you know, the fact that Yusuf Zalal was able to go the distance with the champ really says a lot. And then there's our boy, Billy Q. Bounces back against the knockout loss to Edson Barboza with an insane performance against Damon Jackson. Basically ended Damon Jackson's UFC career. And it was just Billy out-dogging another dog in Damon Jackson. I was saying going into that fight that they're two guys with very similar styles. They take a little bit of damage in the beginning of the fight. And then as the fight goes on, they just get stronger and faster and more dangerous. But Billy just had a lot more of that dog in him than Damon Jackson did, especially on that night. So he comes away with a very impressive win over a really tough guy in Damon Jackson. Obviously, you guys know where my loyalty lies. I'm going with Billy Q in this fight. You know, I've known Billy for many years now. We've trained together a bunch. He's been on the podcast many times. We gotta get him back on in the near future. But we're gonna get into more detail on this card on the Thursday episode. So make sure you tune in for that around 9 or 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Make sure you turn on your notifications if you're subscribed on YouTube. And if you're not, then subscribe on YouTube. Turn on those notifications. Join the show live. And participate in the picks and pours. Have a pour with us. Make some picks with us. It's going to be a good time. Main event, Amanda Ribas getting in there with Rose Namajunas. So Thug Rose is kind of an anomaly. It's like we don't, you know, she was kind of talking about retirement at one point. You know, that fight with Carla Esparza is really going to be like, it's really like a, what's the expression I'm looking for? A black streak on her career. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to remember that as being one of the worst fights of all time. Lost a split decision, but really like nobody won that fight. And then she's coming off of a decision loss against Manafiro. So it's going to be interesting. Like, which Rose Namajunas is going to show up? The Rose that's like contemplating retirement, 1 foot out the door? Or are we going to see the Thug Rose that had DC on his feet yelling, Thug Rose, Thug Rose, Thug Rose? Amanda Ribas coming off of that really impressive knockout over Luana Pinheiro. It was the spinning wheel kick that she followed up with punches. You know, before that, she did have a loss to Macy Barber. You know, she's been hot and cold for her last 7-8 fights, but she's a very skilled fighter. She's really good. And if we see the Thug Rose that is 1 foot in, 1 foot out, then we're going to see Rose Namajunas take a loss here. For those just joining, you know, happy St. Patrick's Day, Sláinte. Hope everybody's enjoying a nice Guinness today. But if we see the Thug Rose of old, she should demolish Amanda Ribas. And I don't think it would even be close. But, you know, it's not something I would necessarily gamble on. Some other fights that stand out here, Edmund Shahbazyan and AJ Dobson. That should be a pretty fun one. Obviously, I already talked about my buddy Billy Q. Not a whole lot else going on here. Ricardo Ramos and Julian Arosa. So Julian Arosa was also on season 22 of The Ultimate Fighter with Billy. So it's interesting that they're fighting on the same card. I know those two have remained friendly since being on The Ultimate Fighter together. Some of you may remember that was the season where Conor McGregor coached against Uriah Faber. Some would say it was the last good season of The Ultimate Fighter. And by some, I mean me. I think it was the last good season of The Ultimate Fighter. let's see. Kamaru Usman's brother, Muhammad Usman, on the prelims here against Michael Parkin. And, you know, not a whole lot of name value on this card, but, you know, I'm going to be watching. I got nothing better to do this weekend. So I think it's going to be good. We'll try and hype it up a little bit more for you guys. On Thursday when we do the picks and pours, it always helps. Like when I'm not that excited about a card and then I start talking about it to you guys, it always helps boost my energy for it. Mark wants to know thoughts on Jose Aldo returning for UFC Brazil. I was not aware of this. Do we have an opponent yet? And I think it's interesting. I mean, in my opinion, Jose Aldo is one of these guys that has nothing left to prove. I mean, he's a legend of the sport. For those of you who have been watching long enough to remember his run in the WEC before coming over and taking over in the UFC, this guy was just an absolute killer. I mean, the day he retires, put him in the Hall of Fame. You know, at the same time, I don't think Jose is at the point where he's really going to get injured in there. I think he's still pretty young, too. I mean, considering he's one of these guys, it's like he's been fighting for 40 years, but he's only 32. You know, you guys know the kind of guy I'm talking about. Let's see, how old is Jose? Pull him up real quick here. Yeah, he's 37. All right. Yeah. So he's been fighting for 45 years, but somehow he's 37 years old. You know, his last fight was against Merab, who's about to fight for the title. Went the distance with him. Didn't really get taken down in that fight. He just kind of got held up against the cage. So the fact that he was able to survive in there with Merab and just get pressed against the cage, before that, he was on a 3-fight win streak against Chito Vera, who just fought for the title, against Pedro Munhoz, and against Rob Font. So, yeah, I think it's awesome that he's coming in there for UFC Brazil. Now, he's going to be fighting Jonathan Martinez, who is a young killer, absolute killer. 29 years old, coming off a 6-fight win streak. And I think it's a fun fight. I think this is really going to prove if Aldo still has it. You know, does he have one more title run in him? You know, sadly, I could see I could see Merab getting passed over if Aldo has an impressive performance and O'Malley calls him out. They could give the screw job to Merab again. I don't think it's very likely, but it also depends on when this Brazil card is. All right, so it's May 4th. Star Wars Day to some of you. Interesting. All right, so we'll get into the Amanda Ribas, Rose Namajunas card in a little bit more detail on Thursday. So again, make sure you guys are subscribed, have notifications turned on for that. Again, that'll be around 9 or 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You guys want to grab some MMA on the Rocks merchandise? Reaper1.co is the website. I'll put the link in the show notes, as always. If you want to grab yourself an over-the-top, under-the-influence t-shirt, tank top, or hoodie, you can use the promo code MMARocks10. Save yourself 10% on your order. Full disclosure, any money I make on merchandise will be spent on alcohol. So if you want to fuel that habit and have that on your conscience, that's on you. All right. I think that's it. I hope everybody has a very happy St. Patrick's Day. Be safe out there and, hoist one up for me. Till next time. Cheers, everybody. Goodbye.